Well, we are back for a second season of Point of View. My name is Chandra Lingatvalvi, and I have become persona non grata of Brock University Students Administrative Council. That's right, a motion passed on January 7th at Student Council, secretly, an in-camera motion, named me and said that I was no longer allowed to attend council chambers. Up until today, no justification had been provided, but that now we have a letter, an official letter from BUSAC, which we will get into after we get through the headlines. On this episode of Point of View, we are talking with the president and spokesperson of the Brock Students for Liberty, who is a new club on campus, agitating for discussion on economic and social issues that address liberty from a libertarian perspective. We also have an interview with BLAST, the Brock Labor and Students Together, who are planning to raise awareness about another tuition hike coming to students of Brock University as it comes to all students every year in Ontario. We also have an interview with Adam Marshall from Brock TV, who is going to tell us all about yesterday's BUSAC meeting. Of course, a meeting I was not allowed to attend. At that meeting, Marshall from Brock TV was there asking questions and taking notes. And he reported that also the Brock Press was there. And that's good news for me, who is a big champion of the student media, paying attention to the student governance. So, what was discussed at that meeting? Well, if you go to busu.net as of the day of the meeting, what you'll find is that there was no agenda posted. This makes it, of course, very difficult for members of the public to be aware of what council is discussing. Typically, meeting minutes are posted on the Monday morning, which is why they are due, why all submissions for motions are due the previous Friday. But the meeting was proceeding, and there was still no agenda posted to the internet. On this agenda was some rather big news, which we will get into with our interview with Mr. Marshall. He will tell us about the administration's decision to put a stop to FedUp, the sustainable food project organized in part by M. Hepler of Oberg Brock, has come to a stop as Brock University has decided. Go to feedbrock.org to see the quote for yourself, has sent an email through which says they will not accept this fee. And the reason is because third-party ancillary fees are being looked at by a lawyer. Of course, this calls into question an entire category of student organization at Brock University, calling into question every single fee that does not extend directly from BUSU. Also at that meeting, two bylaws were proposed to council, bylaw 1000 and bylaw 1100. Marshall reporting through his Twitter handle, AdamMarshall409, that these committees, that this bylaw would create a committee that would vet petitions prior to going out to signature. Of course, this comes being presented to council yesterday, the day before yesterday on Tuesday, comes only a week after a member, a student, approached BUSU with a petition for Brock Radio, petition that asked for $1.75. They were handed back a modified document that had $1.50 on it. On this episode of Point of View, we have an interview with Amanda Hiscox, who is a University of Guelph Oberg coordinator who was arrested and spent time in prison because she helped to coordinate the activism about G20. She is coming to Brock University on Saturday, this Saturday, January 25th, as part of the Brock Social Justice Forum. She's a part of a plenary of speakers speaking about the criminalization of dissent. At this point, I feel a bit like a dissenter, and I feel quite criminalized. So stick around for this one-hour episode of Point of View, because we've got, again, an interview with Brock TV's Adam Marshall to talk about Council. We have an interview with BLAST, the Brock Labor and Students Together. We have an interview with the Brock Students for Liberty and Amanda Hiscox. So we're on location at Brock University in the lab for Brock TV with sports and news producer Adam Marshall, who was at the student council meeting yesterday. Adam is going to provide us a little bit of a correspondence with what took place at council. So first of all, what did the agenda say on the website prior to the meeting?
Actually, the agenda for this meeting wasn't posted on the BUSU website. That actually presented a bit of a problem for me because I wasn't able to stay for the whole meeting, and the reason was I expected it to be short. I didn't know the agenda. I didn't know that there was multiple referendums going to be on this agenda. So had I seen that ahead of time, I would have been able to make different arrangements to stay. So I was there for about the first 2 hours, and then the 2 hours after that, I have on video, which I've reviewed some of, but haven't gone through all of it yet.
So what ended up being on the agenda?
There was a lot of things. Separate from referendums, there was one club funding request from Brock SOS, which actually became a pretty interesting discussion. Referendum-wise, the FedUp affordable food program was scrapped. It was sent to referendum by BUSAC at their previous meeting. And I guess what happened... or what's happened since that last meeting was from OPERG and from the Affordable Food Project received an email from Brock University administration saying Brock University is seeking legal advice regarding BUSU's ability to collect third-party ancillary fees, and this referendum cannot happen in the meantime. So I've never heard of that happening before. That was something that was also sent to I think the way this worked was it was that correspondence would have been sent to Josh Doan as the Speaker of Council. He brought that to Council and said the university says this, but Council did still discuss it and did still vote on it. So I have some of that on video. That's what I'm looking forward to reviewing today. And the discussion eventually led to a vote in favor of removing the referendum. So...
But this was a referendum that was created by a student-led petition that had received quorum. There were at least 500 signatures as submitted. How does council have the power to suspend a student-led petition referendum?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of a new situation, and I don't know that they... I do believe they have the power to retract a referendum if they feel that... something's wrong, that it's not going to be a fair referendum if somebody's thrown off the, you know, the bias of the platform or whatever. I do believe they have the ability to stop a referendum, but this shouldn't be a reason that they do it.
What were the discussions in council centering around in terms of the pros and cons of proceeding with a referendum that the administration has already expressed its difficulty with?
Well, I saw a bit of the discussion earlier on in the night. M brought forward a second question saying, if you deny this referendum from going, could you please ask an opinion question of the student body? So that was an alternate referendum idea. As for the discussion that they had leading up to the decision to retract it, I have to watch that still, to be honest. So we can do that right now if you want. But I imagine the discussion... at the BUSU level, at least at the BUSU exec level, is, you know, what is Brock University saying is going to happen if BUSU were to go ahead and run the referendum anyway, which they totally could have. BUSAC could have upheld the decision to push it to referendum. It's not really BUSAC's problem that the university itself doesn't want to do this. So what I expected to happen was for BUSAC to still send it to referendum, run the referendum, hopefully it passes because it's a great project. Let's say that happens, then when it comes time to collect the money, that would be when the university would say, hey, we're putting the kibosh in this, or we're not cutting you your check. That would have been really interesting, but the university has intervened even earlier in the process at a point where, personally, I didn't even know the university could intervene, because it hasn't even gone to referendum yet, and administration's already put a stop to a student-led initiative, which is concerning.
We've been reporting on this. I talked about this on air last week. At that time, it was rumors. It was merely rumored that the administration was not comfortable with FedUp, but now it is confirmed at council. When you say that the administration sent an email saying that third-party ancillary fees are in question, does that undermine Oberg, Brock Press, and a future viability of Brock Radio? Are all third-party ancillary fees on the line now, or is that reading into that email too much?
It's kind of hard to say. Like the exact quote that I have here, M has published this quote from the email he received. Brock University is currently seeking legal advice around the liability and legality for the collection of third-party ancillary fees, and as such, a referendum cannot be held at this time until a decision has been made. So, they're looking into the liability and legality for the collection of third-party fees. Whether that applies to fees that are already in place is really difficult to say. And it's also difficult to say whether if M suddenly decided to make the Affordable Food Project a division of BUSU rather than a separate corporation, would the university still stomp it out? That would be a really interesting thing for me to want to see what happens.
Is the central issue being framed as to the third-party ancillary fee issue, or is it a contractual problem with Sodexo that fed up? I mean, is there anything in the public record that discusses Sodexo in this discussion?
Well, I don't know how involved Sodexo was in the discussion, but what you could say is that Brock has never mentioned having any issue with third-party ancillary fees until the FedUp project came about. So I wouldn't think that the university would have any intention of preventing an organization like OPERG or CFPU or the Brock Press from continuing to collect their fee. However, I don't see how they can draw a line that would stop the Affordable Food Project but wouldn't also have negative consequences for every other third-party organization on campus.
So this sounds like really big news.
It is. It's a huge deal. I haven't been able to find evidence of this kind of thing happening anywhere else. Not in Ontario, at least so far in my research. I don't know about yours, but it's a very, very complex situation, and it's scary if the university is considering scrapping third-party fees altogether just to prevent one particular one from existing, especially when there's an organization like Sodexo, a massive organization, obviously a massive amount of money involved in their contract with Brock University, a contract which is now available online, but it's redacted heavily. Yeah,
it's available at feedbrock.org. The FedUp project had a freedom of information request to release that document, which was heavily redacted. It's the Brock University and Sodexo service contract, which was a 10-year contract, renewed only last year. That is something that we've been paying attention to, at least as brockbug.com has been interested in it and doing background research. But we haven't yet had a chance to really dig into exploring the issue, but now it has been pushed into the forefront thanks to the work of M and Oberg, as well as at least 15 or 20 core group of students who I've seen at council, highly supportive.
Yeah, and last night, again, huge support for M. Several volunteers from the Affordable Food Project showed up and stayed for a very, very long meeting, again, to demonstrate that students do care about the issue.
And when they presented that meeting, when they presented the student-led referendum petition at the December 3rd meeting, that wasn't approved until after midnight because more than an hour and a half was spent interrogating M. Hepler about FedUp. At that time, BUSU President Cooper Millard issued a constitutional challenge regarding student-led petitions and the definition of must approve, which then resulted in an interesting ruling being made at the following meeting. Do you have any more information about that issue?
Cooper's constitutional challenge didn't come up again last night, but when M was presenting his proposed opinion question, there was a lot of harsh questions asked, a lot of not harsh questions and not pointed at M, but very somewhat accusatory. They were very hesitant of the idea of potentially running the two questions at the same time, because at that point in the meeting, the actual FedUp referendum hadn't been canceled yet officially. It was still on, and M was talking about also asking this opinion question. And a bunch of counselors, including the president, Mr. Millard, jumped on that right away, when obviously everyone in the room knew that the other one wasn't going to go. Like, they weren't designed to both go at the same time. M was just bringing that forward as a last resort, really, I felt, because if you can't run the referendum to get the Affordable Food Project right now, I think it's a great idea. The next best thing would be to get a referendum that concretely shows evidence that students want change and want some sort of project, like whether it's the Affordable Food Project or whether it's BUSU making changes or Sodexo and Brock making changes. I think that question would be the next best thing for him, at least for his organization at this point. I'm going to grab that real quick, if you don't mind.
We're talking with Adam Marshall, sports and news producer at Brock TV, who attended Student Council yesterday. Let's talk about journalism at Student Council. Yesterday was the second meeting at Brock TV where you've brought your camera, and probably the third meeting in a row that you've attended. Yeah. What about Brock Press? Was Brock Press on location yesterday?
Brock Press was there. Mary Perino, who's their internal news editor, was there. And she also had a photographer with her, who I didn't get a chance to meet. But yes, the Brock Press was there. I believe they left at the same time as me, so right before the in-camera meeting. The in-camera session was really complicated, and it's one of the things that we're going to have to figure out, because if Brock TV or the Brock Press is going to cover BUSAC more regularly, which we want to, one of the things that's going to be an issue is the in-camera sessions right in the middle of the meeting. I wanted to ask them to move that to the end of the meeting if they were able to, but I didn't get a chance because they went in camera, did the vote right away, and then I asked Josh Doan, I said, like, is this going to take a while? Like, is this going to be 5 minutes or is it going to be an hour again like last time? And he said, I can't tell you. And then I said, well, who put the in-camera motion on the agenda in the first place? And I couldn't even tell me that. So couldn't really get a clue from the exec as to what it was about. Who even brought it forward, because sometimes that kind of gives you some context as to how long it might take. And those in-camera sessions just existing in the first place in a student council and becoming more frequent, coincidentally, as journalism in BUSAC becomes more ubiquitous, so do these in-camera sessions. And I think that's going to keep happening. I wouldn't be surprised if we show up at every meeting if there's an in-camera session in every meeting, and that's a problem. Because what are they talking about? Really, that's what it, and that's not just me being a frustrated journalist. That's an honest question. What are you talking about at BUSAC?
And you're also an ancillary fee paying student, and have been an ancillary fee paying student at Brock University. You're a member of BUSU.
Yeah, I am. So and that's the other thing about it's an interesting topic of journalism at council is that. Any student journalist there is a student first and a journalist second. So when you go, it can be very hard to hold your tongue and remember that you're supposed to be there as an objective observer and not as a participating student. Even though it's within a student journalist's right to participate as both, but it can be complicated to counselors when you participate as both. So.
Well, tell us your Twitter handle and how we can follow the story. You live tweeted during council yesterday, so a lot of the insights that the public is gleaning first gleaned it from your Twitter. So yeah. Where can we find you on Twitter?
I'm at AdamMarshall409. You can follow me there. I do tweet whenever I'm at a BUSAC meeting, and it's also where I share my stories first. It usually gets shared there before anywhere else. And you can also follow at Brock TV for our news segments.
Thanks for talking with us.
Are you tired of cheesy mainstream cultural affairs radio program with its gratuitous nudity, slide whistle sound effects, and crash shoe phone giveaways? If so, you're tuned to the perfect frequency on your FM radio dial. The Pizza Box Cadillac Radio Hour ain't about the gimmicks and the doodahs and the fancy pants whatnots. The Pizza Box Cadillac serves up a gritty, unpretentious, keeping it real brand of cultural reportage that can only be described as authentastic. Tune in every Friday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Time when the Pizza Box Cadillac Hour begins radiating across the airwaves live from the Welland House in beautiful downtown St. Catharines.
All right, we're starting a second season of Point of View with Chandra Ligafalvi, and I'm joined by a co-producer of the program, Daniel Nardone, who's also the videographer of BrockBug.com. Thanks for sitting in with me, Daniel.
Oh, good to be here, Sam.
So today we have an interesting interview with Amanda Hiscox, who is an Oberg Guelph coordinator who was scooped up in the Toronto G20 protests prior to the weekend of the event. And she'll be here at the Social Justice Forum here in St. Catharines on January 25th, on Saturday, at campus at Brock University for the Social Justice Forum. She'll be part of a plenary of speakers speaking about the criminalization of dissent. How did you first catch wind of Amanda Hiscox?
I caught wind of her when I was a part of Oberg Windsor at the University of Windsor. I was on the board, and there was a provincial board AGM, and I had met her just prior to the, basically on the eve of the Olympics, because she was going to be doing organizing around the Olympics in terms of Olympics on Indigenous land, and there was questions as to if there was any prior and informed consent out in British Columbia in terms of Indigenous treaties and lands.
So what are the politics that drawn you to paying attention to Amanda Hiscox?
Basically, it comes down to her. My similar interest to hers is the involvement in the environment, social justice, and Indigenous rights and things of that nature.
So what has Amanda gone through in the last 3 years?
Well, she's gone through a number of situations of which she said there's a number of individuals that are basically find themselves in that situation just because it's almost like they ended up getting dealt kind of like a bad hand. And she said that she's by no means a particularly she's not like a one-off or something, I guess, in terms of...
You're saying she has consistency and she's constantly involved?
She's constantly involved, yes, with...
So at the Toronto G20 weekend, prior to the weekend itself, the morning as of the event, she was part of a group of people who was scooped up and arrested at around 5 in the morning, and then was not, of course, not participated in the weekend. And I hope she will be telling us. We're waiting for a call from her now to tell us about what she went through in terms of she was convicted or pled. I'm not sure yet.
Yes, because she organized the Get Off, or she was one of the organizers of the Get Off the Fence march. And basically she had put a call out saying that essentially that they are calling for essentially a diversity of tactics in terms of the actions and demos surrounding the G20 summit in regards to austerity and inequalities and environmental and different topics of injustices, I guess, that you see as these Western countries.
So for the year of 2012, she spent most of her time incarcerated. And we're just waiting on the line now for her to call in. Amanda Hiscox from the Oberg Guelph, who will be at the Social Justice Forum on Saturday, January 25th at Brock University. Also at that forum will be Dylan Powell, who is known as the Marineland protester. He will be speaking about some of the legal processes that take place in terms of criminalization of dissent. From his perspective.
Like slap suits, basically.
Slap suits, right.
Yeah, with the province and that. When it comes to activists being slap-sued by the organization they're having their campaign against.
So Amanda Hiscox will also be telling us about, I hope, since she mentioned it in some of her previous conversations, infiltration of the protest movement, that police officers were involved in infiltrating the movement. Now, what's proven in terms of the level of involvement? Was there an agent provocateur involved in Toronto G20? Is that proven or unproven?
Oh, I would say it certainly exists, because a good example of that was actually in Montebello.
In Quebec, yeah. in like 2 years prior, there was like clearly they were police officers like throwing rocks and trying to instigate some sort of riot between police and the group.
Oh, yeah, like basically there was a YouTube video that went out of the
The precedent is there in terms of it being possible, but what happened in Toronto? Yeah, what is proven in Toronto? What can we now, you know, in retrospect, say about Toronto? We can say that there was kettling, and kettling's not cool.
But there was a lot of, preemptive, basically, and kind of watching it for like almost a year prior, that there was a surveillance apparatus over various organizations that they deemed that could be pose some kind of threat to this.
What about a stand-down?
Meeting?
Right. So as the Black Bloc marched through, police are shown to have held back and stood down at that time.
Yeah.
Instead of intervening or approaching them while they march, essentially let the Black Bloc walk down the street and like left like a what is
yes.
now called a
yeah.
bait car
exactly.
to burn
yeah,
so
yeah.
that mm-hmm. the entire protest movement will look like a burning cop car. Instead of have any of the political issues that underlied them.
Exactly, because, I mean, even the summit itself was hardly even broadcast. It seemed as though, even though there was tons of cameras actually documenting it.
So while the prima facie, superficial evidence looks like that kind of conspiracy, is it proven at this point? Can we say definitively? What have the consequences been
legally? Because they say
that, is it satisfying? Have the appropriate actions been taken legally for like police to have been brought to justice who were involved in this, or what happened?
Yeah, well, they basically say that it's really only a public inquiry that can really open it up in terms of what kind of went on that weekend. And because you could, with the public inquiry, you can call in, you can subpoena witnesses, essentially. You have the ability to subpoena.
I see. Yeah. Well, that is not what took place, is it?
No, it's not what took place, even though news sources like the Real News Network, which
right.
documented a lot of activity, like and Paul Jay, which also was at the media center, basically was getting the sense that, he talked to some civil liberties folks and like, yeah, we really should have this public inquiry to finally, make be a situation where Canada can be practicing what it preaches in terms of a charter of rights and freedoms.
Well, we're just waiting for Amanda Hiscox to call in. Thanks for talking, Daniel. I think we need to give her a call and figure out if we gave her the right number on our call-in line.
All right.
So we're going to just take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Amanda Hiscox. So we're joined on the line by Amanda Hiscox, who is a coordinator at Oprah Guelph and was scooped up in the Toronto G20 protests prior to the event. She's been invited to speak at a plenary in the Brock University's Social Justice Forum, which is being held January 25th, Saturday, January 25th, on campus. She's going to be speaking on the theme of criminalization of dissent, and we welcome Amanda onto the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Amanda, what is the subject of your talk?
So, I'm going to be speaking on a panel, and the panel is called the Criminalization of Dissent. And so, I've been particularly asked to speak because of my experience at the G20 in Toronto in 2010. So, I'm going to be speaking about, the lead-up to the G20 and the infiltration that happened to certain groups in the lead-up to that, as well as my arrest and all of the things that happened after the arrest, so the house arrest, you know, the bail conditions and then all of the court dates and those kinds of things. But I'm speaking about it in the context of, you know, the criminalization of dissent that's happening all over the place, and also criminalization of things that aren't dissent. So just basic criminalization of, you know, other communities. So people who are migrants or who are poor and indigenous people, for example. So yeah, I'm also going to be talking about, you know, past ways that dissent has been criminalized, and I'm going to try to compare them and, you know, show that things are not really all that different these days, but perhaps these days people are a little bit more shocked by it, in Canada particularly.
So why did you organize for Toronto G20?
Well, my motivations behind organizing is that I kind of grew up a little, politically speaking, in the anti-globalization movement, and so those kinds of movements and convergences I think are really useful, and I think are really good ways to inspire people towards activism and organizing. And so for me, the G20, first of all, was an opportunity to have something like that in the streets of Toronto. And secondly, I mean, obviously, just the politics of the G20, you know, the fact that, you know, the richest people from the 20 richest countries in the world come together and make all these economic decisions that affect everyone. And now, you know, 3 years later, we can see how they've affected people in terms of austerity and all of the, you know, the stuff that's been happening all around the world since then. So that was my sort of reasons for getting involved. And also because, you know, my experience with these kinds of protests and movements is that people around the world kind of don't expect resistance from North America. And so, for example, in Seattle in 1999 at the WTO protests, you know, the North American media was disparaging. It was like, what are these people doing here? But around the world, the media was like, this is great. You know, people are finally standing up for stuff. And so I think that partially, you know, wherever the G20 goes, people have protests, people demonstrate against them. And I just wanted it to be clear that people in Canada also are resisting this stuff, so that people from around the world know that we're with them, that we're in solidarity.
Music and spoken word with an eclectic taste. This is CFBU 103.7 FM. Truly diverse radio.
Please tell me your name and tell me about why this club exists here at Brock University.
Hi, my name is Mitch Luddington. I think that the biggest reason Brock Students for Liberty started was actually the founder of Brock Students for Liberty, Josh Mueller. Him and I share a lot of the same views in terms of economics, more of an Austrian view of economics, kind of testing the, you know, where we are as an economy and kind of why we're in the state we're in terms of the debt load on students and the debt load on the economy itself. But that's the basis of why I believe in liberty. Now, the Austrian School of Economics is more about free market ideas and liberty at the core of economics. But, of course, you can't have that without the social side of liberty as well. If you don't have freedom of speech, people contesting the ideas that we have currently. I mean, Canada, like it or not, is a very controlled economy, despite the fact that we see ourselves as a more free society. And we are, in regards to, like in a global setting, we do have a lot of liberties, but I think that a lot of that is overlooked. And this group, Brock Students for Liberty, we're trying to bring this discussion up. We don't all agree politically, you know, some are from the right, some are from the left, but I think having that discussion will only benefit the school. And I think, like has been said, Brock being such an established, well, not necessarily an established school in terms of other universities, but it's got that same bureaucracy and the same way of doing things. And I think that we need to look at that and have a discussion if we're going to progress as a society and as a school. So that's what I have to say about that.
2 weeks ago, the Brock Students for Liberty had a whiteboard in the hallways. What was the purpose of that whiteboard, and what did you title the event, and what did you glean from putting that whiteboard up in the hall?
Well, the whiteboard was a free speech wall. The idea behind that was, like I said, the promotion of the civil liberties, free speech being the specific target. The idea of that was to promote among students that you do have these liberties. You know, of course, our idea wasn't to promote anything like hate speech or libel or anything like that, but we want to make sure that if you have an opinion, voice it, because that's the only way to make social change, right? So that was, at least in my eyes, that was the reasoning for it. And I'm sorry, was another part of that question? Or?
Yeah, what did you learn? What do the people want to say? What did they put on that board? You know, there's some go 49ers and I just want to be loved. But I mean, like, what are the controversial opinions? Did you get any controversy put onto the board?
Well, there was a few things. There was stuff about, you know, the minimum wage laws and, you know, what modern views of capitalism are. And I think there's a lot of skewed views here and there and why there are different views. And I think having discussion about that is, you know, apparent from the board. People have these strong opinions, but, you know, if there's no one there to contest those opinions or to discuss those opinions, they're not going to go anywhere. And I think was an example of people have these opinions and views, and if we have a discussion about it, I think that can progress our economy and our school and our society.
So tonight there was a speaking engagement by Professor Calvin Hayes. What did you glean from this speaking engagement? And then secondly, what can we expect from the Brock Students for Liberty in this semester?
Well, I guess to start with the last part of that, Brock Students for Liberty, what we're trying to do is we're trying to increase our membership because we believe that there's a lot of people that have strong opinions and don't necessarily agree with the status quo. So I think you know, if we can get these people involved and have the discussion, is our goal. But we are putting on like next week, Thursday. What's the date of that, Josh? The 30th of January. We're putting on an event by the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. It's just a view on from the economic side, from the debt perspective of our generation, and how a lot of these social programs, though, you know, are, you know, a good idea in terms of the welfare of society, but aren't sustainable. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. And I think having a discussion on some of these underlying issues is a thing that we put at the forefront of our, whatever the word is, the forefront of what we're trying to do.
Where can we find you?
Well, we have a Facebook page, Brock Students for Liberty. If you go on Facebook and search us, you can join us. And what else do we have, Josh, going on specifically online? Oh, the Twitter account as well. And Josh, come here for a second.
I'm being approached now by Josh Mueller. Mueller or Mueller?
Mueller.
We have our email address is bsfl@busu.net. We also have a Facebook group where we kind of engage more in discussions. And we use the page more for information and news. And that's the extent of most of our online social media.
Okay, we've been talking with the Brock Students for Liberty. Check them out on Facebook, Twitter, and the internets. I'm Sean Ligatvalvi.
Need a break from your studies? Looking for work experience? Then why not join the CFBU volunteer crew? It's wicked fun, and you can learn about the music industry while making new friends and developing skills. So if you need a diversion or just want to have some fun, find out how you can be a Brock Radio volunteer. Visit our website at cfbu.ca. CFBU 103.7 FM. Truly diverse radio.
BLAST, BLAST, Brock, Labor, and Students Together. I'm having a conversation now with Karen, who will explain to us what is the impetus for BLAST.
Oh, hi, my name is Karen Hoffman. I am the teaching assistant at Brock University and member of QP 4207, which is the union that represents instructors, teaching assistants, lab demonstrators, marker graders, course coordinators, ESL instructors, and ESL coordinators. BLAST was formed in 2007, around early 2007, late 2006, and it stands for Brock, Labor, and Students Together. It was formed because in early 2007, the Brock University announced very publicly very publicized round of budget cuts in the form of so-called exercise where departments were to project how would the departmental budgets look like if there were certain cuts to it. Our union joined with other labor groups at Brock, OSSTF, BUFA, and QP 1295, the maintenance staff. And we have staged one little demonstration at the entrance of St. David's, on the main entrance to the campus. We had a barbecue. We had an Agri Labor Council speakers there. And quite a few bodies came out. We had a Canadian Federation of Students. I can't remember what was his function, Joel Duff at the time coming. We had fun. We had the regular information picketing at the entrance. We were harassed by security a little bit. Police liaison was called in. And then we walked and chanted towards the Schmon Tower. We had a lot of placards. We had a megaphone. And as we were approaching Schmon Tower, Brock security congregated around and told us we cannot enter the premises of Brock University inside because we had placards, and the sticks onto which the bristle boards were stapled were considered weapons, so we could not really enter. We had to take it down and just take those bristle boards in. So that was our first action. Then afterwards, it petered out a bit in terms of this collaborative activism and direct actions. But we have stayed tuned. We have watched the university's intentions to keep doing these budget exercises and eventually transform into a frontline attack on the conditions of workers, on privatization, various facets of the university, and also cutting jobs as well, of course, with compromising programs, compromising research integrity through various means. And this essentially very nefarious development is being tracked down by us, by members of BLAST. However, we are still yet to come up with some kind of a form of publication or publicizing it to the community at Brock at large.
This past summer, President Lightstone released a letter announcing a president's task force. Was BLAST reconvened in response to what Dr. Lightstone said was the era of haircuts and belt tightening had come to an end, and now was a comprehensive program review? Is the program review central to why BLAST has reformed?
Oh, yes, certainly. It was the impetus to revive BLAST yet again. We have also formed a coalition with all the labor groups, mainly focused on just labor together. BLAST, of course, includes students as well, as it should. But we were talking with presidents and members of other labor groups, and especially BUFA, and we called ourselves the Brock Common Front as a model under the, after the Ontario Common Front of the Ontario Federal Federation of Labor.
Is there a platform of policies? Like, what is the takeaway from people who have never heard of BLAST and are only barely aware of the president's task force and the program review? And what are the principles upon which the activism and information rests upon?
The principle is that a university is a public, should be, public institution that should be publicly administered, publicly funded, fully funded, so it can carry out its traditional or basic fundamental premises of free research and free access to everyone who wishes to study at this tertiary institution. We are one of the very deep kind of principles here, and for us that is being undermined severely, is that the working conditions of those who work at the university are being undermined, and therefore the studying conditions of students are in parallel to those conditions are also being undermined as well. Students, of course, pay a high tuition fees, and every year it's increasing. And the working and studying learning conditions are being are diminishing as we speak. And
So moving forward, what can the public expect out of BLAST?
Out of BLAST, we would like students and our coworkers to listen what we have to say, and we are trying to take it out to the public in various forms, events. Our newsletter, KP4207 newsletter, had a big article on it, a longish article in September. We would like them to take it seriously because this is not just something that is particular to the university. That means budget cuts, worsening of working and learning conditions, but it affects society at large. It affects our futures. Education, from the student's standpoint, education is public good. It's a social good. It's not a private investment, as the dominant ideology tries to tell us. In terms of generating knowledge in a free, unencumbered way, it is important for us to realize that that's not taking place at public universities in Canada, that public universities open themselves quite deliberately or complying with the dictates that are coming from federal and provincial governments. That means the funding is being reduced. So universities are kind of forced in a way to fund for themselves, and attracting private investment. Private investment, of course, compromises research because it's very much directed towards a for-profit agenda of various corporations at Brock, especially its biological sciences, pharmaceuticals, pharmaceutical companies, various forms of health research is being affected by singular, very much for-profit interests of private entities. And that compromises research in a way that not only that what is being studied and found is patented by the private corporation and doesn't reach the public realm, doesn't really serve public as knowledge should, but also it is utilizing the knowledge of students, grad students, and faculty members who are doing the research in a practically still a public facility. So private interests and profitable interests are benefiting from a publicly funded institution, although half of the public funding comes from directly private pockets of students and their parents.
What we do here, no one else does anywhere. We are CFBU 103.7 FM, truly diverse radio.
The letter that I was given. Here it is. I have it right here. All right, this is the letter that was handed to me by the secretary this afternoon on January 22nd as I record this episode of Point of View. The letter is addressed to Chandra Ligatfalvi, host, Point of View, Brock Radio. Interesting that it's addressed to me as a member of Brock Radio. Quote, "Dear Chandra, this letter is formal notice by the Brock University Students Administrative Council in regard to the council's decision to ban you from any further council meetings, proceedings for the remainder of the 2013-14 term. The following letter is a notice to inform you on how council came to this decision. The council believes that the physical safety and psychological well-being of its membership should be top priorities during meetings. Council believes the actions you have taken in and out of council chambers have gone beyond the scope of fair criticism and have compromised that safety and well-being. Council believes some of your actions and behaviors related to council meetings have been unacceptable. We have an expectation of students and community members to uphold the principles of decorum and the spirit of codes of conduct for BUSU and Brock University during meetings. Yours sincerely, Josh Doan, Speaker, on behalf of BUSAC, Brock University Students Union." So, this is a very interesting document. It's interesting because, hey, I'm only banned for the year. I'll be back in September, I guess. I don't know. What, I can go to the May meeting? I'll see you May 5th? Is that what this meeting says? So, why? No, there's still no justification here. Interesting that the priority of council is its own emotions. And very interesting and probably slanderous that council believes, quote, the physical safety is affected of its members because of actions, quoting, actions you have taken in and out of council chambers. Again, completely unspecified what those actions are. I suppose they are expecting me to put myself on trial. Of course, I live in a world where I'm innocent until proven guilty, and this has proven nothing. This has not proven that I'm guilty. This has proven that they don't have the guts to explain what's going on. Now, if I was really a threat to anyone's physical safety or psychological well-being, why in the world would I be back at the end of this term? Why in the world wouldn't they have charges pressed against me? There are no charges of harassment. I have never been escorted off of campus. I can walk up to the door, but as soon as I step through the door, I'm now compromising physical safety and psychological well-being. It's absolutely ridiculous. And the way in which the series of events took place completely reveals what it is true, what truly they are after, and they want opacity when I am trying to create transparency. So on the November 5th meeting, after Brock Radio was unfunded, I showed up with a video camera operated by Brock student Daniel Nardone. And I asked a series of questions following up on the policy, the politics, the issues that will get Brock Radio its funding back. I asked for those questions, and I pointed the camera at the executives and members in the room who were involved in the campaign. The purpose of my presence was the politics, as a member of Brock Radio. On the November 5th meeting, I was there. Nardone, who is a Brock student, he borrowed a Brock camera to do it, to point cameras at executives, and all we did is post a 6-minute clip to the internet. A clip that I ask questions, you see the answer. Do I look a little rough in the video? Probably should have shaved. Doesn't really matter though, because they're just legit policy questions. Well, basically, this is the reason I've been banned from council, because the very next meeting, Councillor Andrew Kemble motioned to ban videography. The video ban was put to the front of the December 3rd meeting, and at that meeting, they decided in a 7 in favor, 5 against, and 17 abstention motion to ban video. When they asked everyone to turn off their camera, I said, "I do not recognize your authority to tell me to turn off this camera," and no. They put the meeting into recess and called security. Security took about 25 minutes to make its way into the room, and during this time, I sort of just had a little speech. I went up to each a couple different people, and I asked Andrew, why'd you do this motion? I asked Adam Marshall, how do you feel about this video ban? And then we have my conversation with security and so forth, and I posted all of that as well. So fully transparent. I'm probably the most transparent, overly transparent, more than you ever wanted to know. You can see at brockbug.com. So, I mean, my flaws are all out there. My guts are hanging out of me compared to this corporation, which is hiding behind in-camera motions and writing me letters that accuse me of going beyond the scope of fair criticism when they can't even so much as criticize fairly anyone. They didn't criticize fairly Brock Radio. They sit in their ivory tower telling us that we are not representatives of the students, and it is absolutely, it is frustrating, because this is completely, completely against my free speech and the free speech of anyone who is related to the kind of work I do, which is media, journalism, policy, asking questions, putting it out to the public, creating a dialogue. I have been suppressed systematically as I worked with and against Busuu. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole what is the origin story of how I ended up becoming who I am, why do I have a Brock Radio show, why do I have brockbug.com. I think that that will become obvious as time goes on. But the reason I'm doing a second season of Point of View now, which will be run weekly Thursdays at 2 p.m. Until April, this program is about Brock University students, politics, and beyond. So we have conversations that pertain to the Brock University experience. We have cast a light into that chamber, and it has closed its door tightly, at least against me. Very interesting that, I'm like, really have to hold it together. Because of how frustrating it is. But I want to tell you something. I might wear my heart on my sleeve, but that is really no reason to ban me from a meeting like this. It doesn't really make sense. I have never called anyone a name. None of my online discourse has called anyone names. I have only ever quoted people's quotes, like the things they say. And I say, well, this thing they said means this. Now, whether or not you agree with my interpretation of their quotes, it's just their quotes, and it's in search of policy. I have never, ever made a personal attack against anyone, and in fact, when it's the easier thing to do, making personal attacks, I defend the individuals in terms of, hey, you know, we're all just people. What I try to do is go after the policy, and this is policy that is actually affecting the public. This is policy that, there's no policy apparently to help Brock Radio. Busuu has absolutely no plans on helping Brock Radio connect with the students. It says, oh, there's a bunch of barriers, there's no bridges, and we're not going to build those bridges. In fact, we don't need no water. Let it burn. So that's the kind of Busuu we have right now, a Busuu that sides with the administration, a Busuu that sides against Brock Radio, a Busuu that writes me a letter and accuses me of physical safety. I am compromising their physical safety, and I haven't even so much as called them names. So that's the kind of world that you're living in, Brock kids. I don't mean to scare you. I just mean to wake you up. Well, that's my, like, diatribe. Probably went on for a little long there. But look, the bottom line is the work that I've done, it's not being done by anybody else in this community. That they've targeted me in this way is, for many, par for the course. This is for people in the real world, like, hey, you must be onto something because you got banned. I mean, but hey, that's up to you. That is ultimately, I am on trial now. Who is Chandra Ligatvalli? Why did he get banned? Do I deserve it? Okay, well, go to brockbug.com, click on videos, and scroll through. First of all, you'll notice a couple things. You'll notice that this is the only place to learn about the Brock University political scene. There's hardly any discussion on the Brock Press. This radio show on Brock Radio is the only place other than Brock Bug. And they work hand in hand, of course, my radio program and brockbug.com. Go to the show, go to the website, and put me on trial. If I'm on trial, if the psychological safety, the psychological well-being and physical safety is such an issue, and I'm on trial, then that's fantastic. I want to be on trial because I've worked really hard. I've never been paid a single dime by the public, except for when I was employee of Brock TV, and I wanted to do, you know, a talk show, and I wanted to prevent the executive director from going to Calgary on student money, you know, when I wanted to defend the interests of the constituents that I worked for. But other than after that, I've devoted hundreds of hours to researching, reporting, checking my emotions, and just keep going to this issue. So I don't think the burden of proof is even on me. But let's just go with it. I'm on trial. Brockbug.com. Okay? Just go. Go to the website. Look through the videos. Am I a bully? Have I affected their psychological well-being? Now, what kind of counselor, like, is even worried about psychological well-being? There was a phrase that was used about this when this story first broke. And that phrase is, mittens for kittens. I mean, they're just kids. They're just kids and their futures are on the line. If you quote something they've said, they might not get a job later. Oh my God. I don't even know. Does that mean that this is the death of journalism? The practice of journalism itself is a compromise to the futures of the student representatives of this students' union? What kind of students' union is this where journalism is so scorned and is in fact hated? That's the world that you live in, Brock kids. I don't know what to do about it except produce a weekly radio show and a website and videos and ask others to do that. And the good news is others are doing that because we had Brock TV and Brock Press at council last week. It's whack-a-mole. You can knock me down, but I think two more will pop back up. I think that the public knows that it has a right to information and that the media has a responsibility to bring that information. And that's all there is to it. So, you know, this show is going to be the front line in gathering information, gathering quotes, and gathering perspectives. That's why it's called Point of View. We want to bring all of those perspectives in, and then we're going to test the logic of them. And that's what I've been doing. And that's all I've been doing, is testing the logic over and over again. I've tested the logic of Brock University Students Union. And in doing so, I have been called all sorts of names. A Twitter account was made specifically to mock me, at Shamdor L. A Twitter account was made to call me a fake journalist and a fake student. And I have to sort of brush it off. A secret in-camera motion naming me and banning me without giving me the opportunity to face my accusers. Okay, that's just how they do things around here. How the game is played. Well, my work here is to tell the first years, here's your magic warp whistle, welcome to level 4. Because you can't just, the way it works here is, you get upset by February, you do something by March, you leave for your parents' house again in May, you come back in September, and the cycle repeats over and over again. Busu says, oh, we've really learned how much about how to promote the general meeting, and then the next year completely neglects the general meeting again and again and again. And the one person who's actually showed some commitment, some longevity, and some consistency, that's me. I've been doing this since 2010, essentially. I've been paying attention and critical since 2012. I have a different kind of corporate memory. I have a memory of a Busu that has amnesia. I have a memory of a student population that can't remember anything. They don't know what's going on around them in terms of this governance structure. And they think, oh, what's the matter? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Whatever. And then by third and fourth year, they're like, okay, well, I mean, like, I'm smarter now, so I kind of get it, but I'm really busy because of exams and stuff. And then the cycle repeats. And so you have this unaccountable, headless corporation which dresses itself up as a students' union when really it is just, well, I'm going to let you decide that. My name is Shonda Ligatfalvy. This is Point of View. You can find us at facebook.com/POV Radio. POVRadioBrock.tumblr.com is the radio show's primary blog, as well as we are now on Twitter at POV Radio. Follow us there. Tune in and check it out. We have clips from season one where we have conversations that you won't find anywhere else, including the only student media conversation with the administration about the student life fee, as well as conversations with the vice president of the university about the austerity that is coming with the president's task force. That is at cfbu.ca/archive.php. So you want to get informed. That's where it's at. Apparently that work has made it, quote, it has affected the psychological well-being of BUSU's members. Well, I am sorry that your psychology has been affected by my journalism. Maybe.
It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. Slowly, the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, please, leave us alone in our living room. Let me have my toaster and my TV, my steel melted radios, but I won't say anything. Just leave us alone.
No recovery, 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 no recov